Welcome to a very special edition of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Ruth O'Regan, MD, Professor and Division Head of Hematology and Oncology in the Department of Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and Associate Director of Clinical Research at the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center, to discuss the impact of the coronavirus disease 2019 on clinical practice. The COVID-19 pandemic has affected more than 33 million people worldwide, and for patients with cancer, the pandemic has forced healthcare systems across the globe to adapt traditional care continuums. In our exclusive interview, O'Regan discussed the protocols the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center has put into place in light of COVID-19, the rise of telemedicine, best practices for in-person visits in the clinic, and the importance of maintaining well visits throughout the pandemic. Thank you so much, Dr. O'Regan, for taking the time to speak with me today, of course, on COVID-19 and the impact on clinical practice. So I guess it's fitting to start with my first question. How has COVID-19 impacted your practice?
So, you know, I think we're gradually kind of getting back to somewhat of a new normal, but initially when we thought we were going to get a large surge, we obviously had implemented a lot of processes so that we could be made available to help out inpatient services if needed. Thankfully, that didn't happen, but what that did for our clinics was it meant that we changed almost all our visits to televisits, starting initially with just telephones and then more recently we're doing almost everything by video. So we basically went down to having a breast cancer doctor of the week who would do all the inpatient visits, which were very few because we did almost all of them remotely. And now we've kind of gone into our next phase where we are actually seeing patients on our clinic day, but we see much fewer than before. We do almost all of them remotely. So for example, last week I probably saw about 6 patients in person and the rest of them were all remote visits. The good news is that I think the video visits are actually working really quite well now. And I think patients are happy with the idea of not having to come in. We still, of course, do see patients in person, particularly patients getting chemotherapy or new patients that we know are going to need chemotherapy. But I mean, it's been quite nice on the videos. You know, you're able to discuss oncotype results with them, show them their result by sharing your screen. And so I think we're getting much more comfortable with that. And I think that's basically the way it's probably going to be going forward, where I think at least for breast cancer patients, a lot of them will actually end up being still managed kind of remotely a lot of the time.
And now that states are beginning to reopen, have you found that clinical trials are starting to pick back up again?
Yes. So what we did with our clinical trials was, even when we were anticipating a surge, we did leave the ones open that we felt were offered, you know, therapy to patients. Ideally, what we would like is for the research staff to be on the same video calls that we're on. And we're working on that. It really is just logistics of making sure that they have secure systems at home so they can join the calls. But that really works incredibly well because we can do our part of the video and then they can do their part of the visit right afterwards. So that's where we were. And now we've pretty much opened all of our clinical trials to accrual again. So again, we anticipate there potentially will be a little bit less bandwidth than we had before, but we certainly feel it's the right thing for patients to have the clinical trials back up and running. We are going to allow some limited in-person visits with the research staff and the patients, but they will, of course, be wearing the same PPE that we've been wearing in the clinic. So I'm pretty excited about that. I feel like our accrual, of course, went massively down in March and April, but I feel like now that we have the trials opened up again, we're hoping that we can start getting more patients on.
Now, you mentioned the use of PPE. For those patients who do have to come into the clinic, what are some of the best practices you've adopted?
Well, so what we're doing is really, so the PPE, we wear a surgical mask and a face shield. Obviously, hand washing before and after seeing the patient is key, and sanitizing your hands. I try to maintain social distancing, which, as you can imagine, is somewhat of an issue. So what we've done with that is we stagger when physicians and providers are in the clinic. So for example, I may see patients early in the morning, and then one of my colleagues will come in for the second part of the morning, and then another one in the afternoon. So really limiting the amount of providers that are actually in the workrooms in person at any one time, particularly because our nurses aren't really able to work remotely, so they really have to be in that space. Also moving the pharmacists out of the space they usually would have been in there. So we're doing our best to try and socially distance, but it is obviously somewhat of a challenge. And then within the waiting rooms, trying to get patients into the exam rooms, really minimizing the amount of time in the waiting rooms and having social distance when they're in the waiting rooms as well. So there's some of the things we've been doing. We don't use N95s in the clinic. That's been really reserved for patients who actually have COVID. So there are some of the things that we've been doing. And, you know, we've had sufficient PPE to be able to do that.
So, of course, starting at kind of the beginning of the pandemic, there was very little information on the impact of the virus on patients with cancer. Now we're starting to see registries. We saw some data, I think, from the COVID-19 registry led by Jeremy Warner and ASCO. Is that kind of helping build that knowledge base?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, I think it's very clear that our patients who are getting treatment, active treatment, are immunosuppressed, and we need to be obviously very careful in how we manage them. You know, of course, one of the things with cancer patients that was something that actually hasn't been as much of an issue as I thought was, you know, they can get fevers and sore throats, and it's not related to COVID. So we actually, for a while, we actually had an APP run a clinic, which was basically kind of a COVID rule out clinic for our patients and the solid transplant patients. We have disbanded that now because our volumes, thankfully, haven't been high enough to actually merit having an APP over there. But I think we are learning more, and I think the patients know that they have to be extra careful. And that's why I think these remote visits are really important to try and prevent them coming in. When we were expecting a surge, what we were doing is, for patients who were coming in to get treatment, we do a remote visit with them the day before. They get their labs very often done off-site. So then they would just come into the building, go up to the infusion area and get their treatment and then go home. Now it just makes more sense just to kind of see them very quickly in person, and then they go up for their treatment after that. So that's one of the changes essentially that we've made.
Is there anything else over the course of these past few months that your institution has implemented or you've noticed kind of anecdotally that you'd like to share?
Well, not so much that, but I think one of the things that we are concerned about is, because we haven't been doing screening mammograms and colonoscopies, I think we're all pretty worried that we're going to get a huge surge in volume when patients start coming back in. I'd also say, I think, typically we have a very screened population of patients at University of Wisconsin, so we see a lot of small estrogen receptor positive breast cancers. That's not what we're seeing now. We're now seeing, you know, triple negative breast cancers, larger cancers, more advanced cancers, and I think we're concerned that that's what we're going to see. I personally think I have more patients getting chemotherapy right now than I've had in a long time. So I think that's something just to be aware of. And I think we all agree that that's probably going to happen. As far as other best practices, I think, one of my colleagues, Toby Campbell, is an expert in patient communication. And he actually did a very nice presentation for NCCN, where he was basically talking about a lot of things, because he does palliative care as well, but about video etiquette and how we should make patients feel comfortable when we can't actually reach out to them or touch them or whatever, or just seeing them through a computer screen. So I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned in that. And I think, yeah, that's a nice resource to go to. I think if people are interested in kind of what's the best way of doing that. I mean, it covers everything like where your camera should be, you know, how you should introduce yourself, all those type of things. I think that are, it's important to make patients as comfortable as possible, since it's kind of a little bit of an artificial environment for them compared to what they're used to. Say, especially in the breast cancer field, I think we're really learning that there's a lot of patients we do not have to see in person. And living in a state like Wisconsin that's very rural and with bad winters, I think we're increasingly going to be able to hopefully treat more patients or manage more patients by using these remote visits. So I think it's something we've wanted to do for a long time. And if there's any silver lining of COVID, it kind of brought all those processes forward much more rapidly than I think we anticipated was going to happen.
And I guess as a final note, now that states are reopening, are you still recommending patients to kind of quarantine themselves, or do they have the same ability to leave the house now?
Well, you know, obviously our state has reopened up quite a bit. I mean, generally we follow whatever the state guidelines are, but I think for somebody actively getting chemo, we generally encourage them to stay at home. And I must say most of them are, you know, they do not want to go out. And if they are going out, obviously wearing masks and washing their hands and doing the PPEs that's recommended by the CDC. So that's kind of what we've been recommending.
Those were all my questions. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I always, when I talk, it's just always make a thing about blood products, because I think there's always potential reduced amount of blood products. So I think people giving blood is always very important if people want to do anything to help.
I heard a couple of months ago that I guess the virtual visits at first weren't being reimbursed, but now they are. Is that true?
Yeah, so actually CMS has been pretty amazing over this. So what they'd never done before, they were reimbursing for just phone visits. Now, the way it works right now is that the video visits, because you can actually see the patient, they're billed really at the same rate as in-person visits without the facility charge, obviously. Phone visits are still being reimbursed, but they are at a considerably lower rate than the video visits. I think just the one thing I would say as well is we really are trying to do video visits almost exclusively, but you know, sometimes patients just don't have the capability of doing that. But I do think there's a messaging in it as well, as far as where the schedulers call them, just to make them understand, you know, the video visit is definitely preferable for patients. In the beginning, I have to say it was very hard giving patients, you know, bad news just by phone without being able to see them. But by doing it by video, it is a lot better. So I think that's one place where I think we could do a little bit better, is just basically how we message the video visits and, you know, making sure that the patients have the choice that they want, which could be the video visits, or if they can't do that, the phone visits, or even coming in if they want to. I think that's one thing, we can certainly have a lot more options in terms of the way we see patients. And I think patients respect that, and they like having the choices.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.